If the world feels like it's getting more crowded, it's because we've become a truly urban planet. More people are living in cities today than ever before. And the phenomenon of the instant city is spreading throughout the developing world. While on assignment to cover news in Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan for NPR, Steve Inskeep is often based in a city in a neighboring country that has its own share of tensions and problems. Karachi is Pakistan's largest city, and while he was there, he observed many vivid examples of the perils and the possibilities that are facing the world's population centers. Steve Inskeep is co-host of NPR's Morning Edition, and his recent book about his experiences is called Instant City, Life and Death in Karachi. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's an honor to be here, Rick, and thank you for helping me to travel so many places I haven't been through your shows.
Well, thank you. And reading your book, of course, it's set in Karachi, but it occurred to me it's a lot more about one city.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a project that I got interested in because I have traveled a lot of different places, and you see common threads. You see Cairo and Tehran, both cities that are way more than 10 million people now. I traveled a few years ago to Lagos. I've been to Bogota in Colombia. I read about so many other places around the world. And yeah, I mean, I realized there was this global trend of massive urban growth, of massive migration to cities. It encompasses so many things happening to the economy and to our world and to our culture as a species. And there's almost a conversation going on between different cities as they look at each other, take ideas from each other, spread notions around, spread money around, and grow and change.
Now, when you take the example of Karachi, you mentioned after World War II, it had, 400,000 people? Today, it's 30 mm-hmm. times that population.
At least.
The population of Pakistan probably hasn't multiplied 30 times since World War II. But the city has.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've tried to look at. I've defined an instant city as a city that has grown much more rapidly than the country to which it belongs. And that really doesn't narrow it down that much. There are so many cities like that around the world. I mean, there's scores of them, if not hundreds of them, in China that qualify. There are cities like Mumbai in India or Nairobi in Kenya. It's everywhere. There are even a number of cities in the United States that qualify. Houston, Phoenix, even Los Angeles.
Yeah, you mentioned Houston is six times its population since World War II.
Yeah. And it's tremendous growth there. And I've done some reporting there as well. And it's fascinating to see the way that it spreads across the landscape and the different kinds of people that you meet. As a matter of fact, if you go to Houston, it's not hard to find a Pakistani community. There are people from Karachi that you can find in Houston. People go to different cities looking for a better life than where they came from, or trying to flee, sadly, in some cases, flee a catastrophe that happened in the countryside or in the country from which they came.
Now, when all these people are converging onto a city, that creates a new urban chemistry. What's the result of that?
Oh, yeah. You have different kinds of people, and throwing them together in this swiftly changing place exposes all these different fault lines. There are so many that are visible all at once and just really dramatically visible in a swiftly changing place like Karachi on the shores of Pakistan. You have rich versus poor. I mean, there are glass office towers by the beach if you go around this city, and you will also find vast unauthorized neighborhoods where millions of people live in small concrete block houses on land that essentially has been snatched from the government through some scheme or another. You have divisions between old-timers in the city and newcomers. And I bet this happens in the city where you live, where even the newcomers eventually become old-timers and start resenting whoever comes after them. You have ethnic divisions. You have language divisions. Many languages are spoken in a city like Karachi. It's like New York City in that way. You have so many different ideas, contending and competing ideas for what the city could be. And different people in different decades may come out on top, and the city just rapidly changes and then changes again. And just when you think it can't change anymore, it does.
And I guess the point of your book is this is now the new norm. The majority of the people on this planet are in this culture.
Yes. Yeah. And it's kind of exciting to write about because this is a history in a way. But it's history that has happened so quickly that you can go around and find people who've seen the whole thing. And they've seen this place grow almost beyond recognition.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Steve Inskeep, and we're talking about his new book, Instant City, Life and Death in Karachi. We think of the developing world of having these massive cities. I was just in Istanbul, and 14 million people. It just seems inconceivable. But it's also in the United States. You called Phoenix an instant city. Does that have some kind of a connection with the tumultuous politics in Arizona today?
Oh, I think it's pretty obvious that it does. Phoenix, by the United Nations calculations, the UN has these estimates that I use of what cities have been in population in different decades. Phoenix is something like 16 times larger than it was as a metropolitan area in 1950. 16 times larger, which means that almost everybody there is a newcomer. We know that migrants, immigrants, legal and illegal, have come from the South, from Latin America. But of course, people have also come from the North, from across the United States, and to some extent from other parts of the world. And they're all contending for a place in this metropolitan area where the rules are still being written and where the landscape is incredibly new. I mean, I was in Phoenix a couple of years ago, and you go about the downtown, and there are these spectacular new buildings. And they had, when I was there, they had just been opening train lines, and they were so new that there was a car that got struck by a train. I mean, the people were getting used to the idea of having these trains on the street. And you have this place that is rapidly changing, and that does have political effects. And it doesn't surprise me that Arizona, where Phoenix is the great metropolis, would become the epicenter for our debate about immigration, and especially illegal immigration, because you have this city where no one can feel entirely comfortable because it's new to everyone.
So this new mix of people, I mean, in the case of Phoenix, you've got, you know, wealthy people coming in and immigrant laborers coming in and tripping over each other and having to share this urban environment. And then in the case of Karachi, you've got a situation where Hindus were kicked out and Muslims were moved in, and it became more homogenous and less diverse. It seems like it's a prescription for not stability, but almost counterintuitively instability when you have that loss of diversity.
Oh, yeah. And I think that this is something to bear in mind. I mean, we get tense when home changes. And I totally understand that given the neighborhood that I live in Washington, D.C., which changed a lot before I got there and has been changing ever since I arrived. A lot of our identity is wrapped up in the home that we live in. And when there are changes around, it becomes a difficult situation. Now, you would think that if a city became more homogeneous, as you would say, if everybody was the same, that there would be less conflict. But when I look at the history of Karachi, I find almost an uncontrolled experiment to see if that is true. And you're exactly right, Rick. In 1947, when Pakistan became independent, India became independent a day later. Both of them were freed from British rule. India was to be a majority Hindu nation. Pakistan was to be a majority Muslim nation. But of course, there was diversity in the population on both sides. Karachi was actually a majority Hindu city there in Pakistan. The vast majority of the Hindus within a few months either fled or were driven out. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims arrived as refugees from India. And the city went from being incredibly diverse to being, on the surface at least, not diverse, 90-some percent Muslim. You would think that would make things quieter and more peaceful, but in reality, what happened over time, I feel this is a parable, a metaphor for our existence. What happened over time was that people found new divisions among themselves. Muslims turned against other Muslims. People argued over ethnicity. They argued over language. They argued over money and power and land, the things that people obsess over in any city. Making that city less diverse did not make it more stable. In fact, quite possibly the reverse, because there were so many Hindus who had been part of the community there, who had been community leaders, who had been members of the elites, who had been business owners, and all of their education and their money and their just human capital, their ability, was taken away from the city and taken out of the equation.
Wow. So they sort of created an insularity by making a homogeneous city, and that let fear take root.
Yeah, and just, I mean, people, of course, you know, they're going to argue and they're going to contend with each other about what kind of a place do we want this to be? What kind of a country do we want to live in? What kind of a city do we want to live in? What kind of a neighborhood should this be? What kind of a civilization do we want to be a part of? Americans, of course, have these debates as well, and they can be ferocious debates, and that's perfectly fair. But of course, they become dangerous when those debates are irresponsible or when they're conducted in places where there is not a good law and order situation. And that, over time, has proved to be the situation in Karachi and in a lot of other cities around the developing world. Let's remember, we're talking about a global trend here. And if we went to Mumbai in India, it's a different country, but we would find many of the same problems. If we went to Nairobi, we would find many of the same problems. In Cairo, in Bogota, we would find variations on these problems. When you have these divisions in society and there's no referee, there's no judge, because law and order, the writ of the government, as it is said in Pakistan, simply does not extend down to all the people. The government has somewhat lost control of the situation. It becomes an extraordinarily dangerous and deadly debate to have.
Bringing it again back to the United States, I think there's this trend of people migrating to states where they feel more comfortable, states where their neighbors have their sort of similar outlook. And that means liberal areas become more liberal and conservative areas become more conservative. Is that related in some way to the lessons you're learning from the developing world?
Oh, I suppose so. There's a writer named Bill Bishop. There's a book that he put out called The Big Sort, in which he documents this trend of people moving to counties where more people are like them. And you have county by county, community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, people being sorted out by political ideology, by party affiliation. And there's something human about that. You know, it's very normal, and it's happened in one way or another throughout our history. I mean, I quote Mike Royko, the great Chicago newspaper columnist, writing about Chicago from the 19th century up to the 1950s, he says, where there were these really distinct ethnic neighborhoods where people would cluster according to what country they came from and what language they spoke or what religion they were. And you just wouldn't leave the neighborhood, because you couldn't. If you crossed the wrong street or crossed the railroad track into somebody else's territory, you might very well be attacked. So there's something natural about this. It happens. But I want to think of a city as the place where ultimately those barriers are overcome. They have to be overcome. You do have in a city, and especially a great megacity that's taking in migrants, countless kinds of people, millions of them, and they are forced on some level to deal with one another, even if many of them do at some point cluster in these ethnic neighborhoods. They're forced at some point to appreciate each other's qualities, to appreciate the diversity of the place, and they're called upon to make use of the resources of everyone that they can, because the challenges are so immense. These cities are where the future is being built, where the global economy is being built, where global stability or instability is being determined, where income inequality is going to be dealt with or not dealt with. And overcoming these questions of diversity is a big part of that.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Steve Inskeep and his new book, Instant City: Life and Death in Karachi. Steve, when you walk through the streets of an instant city like Karachi, do you find people demoralized, hopeful, happy? You wrote about one man who said, "I don't recognize the country I once knew." What thoughts hit you as you walk through what a lot of people would call a hellhole like Karachi?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people in Pakistan who despair about the state of the country right now, as you could understand. They've been through years of war, and there are terrible political difficulties. They had this revolution, sort of like the Arab Spring. They had a revolution, got rid of a military dictator in 2007, 2008, and what has followed has been years of trouble and disappointment. They're discovering that it's very long and frustrating and arduous to rebuild a democracy, as I'm sure that people in Arab nations are also going to find out. They're beginning to find out. It's a tough road, and especially for this troubled country at this troubled time. But that's not all that you experience. You go into some industrial neighborhood, and you just start talking with people, and you realize that you're talking with a guy who's 20 years old, but he has done so much in his life already. He grew up in a rural village in the war-torn border area with Afghanistan, and he wanted a better education, and he managed to get his parents to send him as a teenager down to Karachi to stay with some relatives who are already here. And he gets the education in a school, and the village elders back home are impressed with him, and they send him some money, and he uses it to open a business. He's a fabric wholesaler. He's part of the giant textile industry there in Karachi. And all of a sudden, he's a business owner. And he's hiring other guys who've moved down from the village. And they're only being paid $3 or $4 or $5 a day. But that's a lot more than they could make in the village. And you discover that in this place that, yeah, you could see as a hellhole. Because, I mean, it's polluted, it's crowded, it's dangerous. It's not developed in many ways. The power constantly goes out. Sometimes there are even water shortages in some neighborhoods. It's a tough place to live. And yet for so many people in it, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to make their lives at least a little bit better than they were. And you have to recognize the terrible problems, the terrible human cost of a city like this. And yet you want to believe that people can ultimately succeed in making their lives at least a fraction better. And I just want to say that maybe the most valuable thing that I feel that I did in this project was just show up, go visit a place that's very different from my home, and I quickly found just people. I mean, interesting, ordinary people who had stories to tell that sometimes reminded me of home and sometimes seemed so strange. And you keep realizing how complicated a city like this is. Just one example, this is a city where formally, for most people, alcohol is banned. It's supposed to be against Islam. But in reality, plenty of people drink. And in fact, religious minorities are allowed to have liquor stores. So they tend to be run by Hindus who still exist in the city of Karachi. And one evening with a friend of mine, I went to see a liquor store. I just wanted to hang out. And it was in this dark alley between two warehouses. And there was like a window cut in one of the warehouse walls. And guys were handing these tightly wrapped packages out to people, customers. And again, it's supposed to be for non-Muslims, but nobody asks your religion when you show up at the liquor store. And this guy started talking to me and insisted that I was his guest. He seemed to be a regular at the store, and he wanted me to come to this room that he knew of and just sit around and drink a beer, drink a Millennium Brew, which is actually made in Pakistan. And we ended up going into one of the warehouses and up a spiral staircase, a metal spiral staircase, and into this grungy room with a sheet over the window. And there were four guys in the corner sitting on a mattress that was on the floor, playing cards. They were Hindus. They worked at the liquor store. They had little posters of some of their gods up on the wall, and they were playing cards on their break. And this man, who was such a regular customer, had found out where their break room was, and he showed up, and they barely looked twice when he came in because he was such a regular there. And we just sat and talked for a while and sipped a beer. And that kind of experience to me is worth 100 dissertations on a city. You just realize that there are human beings who find ways to be comfortable and find ways to enjoy and experience life, even in a situation that seems to us harsh and forbidding.
Learning about life and celebrating it in an instant city. Thanks very much, Stephen Skeep, for the insight and the inspiration.
Oh, thank you.
Our next destination couldn't be more different from the instant cities of the world. The dangers you'll encounter in the deepest reaches of the Amazon rainforest might come from nature, or it might come from an arrow aimed in your direction by people who just don't want you invading their corner of the world. Scott Wallace tells us what it's like to be part of a rare expedition to trace the steps of an uncontacted tribe. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.